Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Jay Juster, and we're going to be talking about his book, Breathe Well and Prosper, Achieve Total Health, Wealth, and Well-Being in 20 Minutes. Do you ever get really tired during the day? What if Jay could show you how to get more energy and life satisfaction just by breathing? Imagine having the energy and the vitality to do what you love all of the time, even doing chores with enthusiasm. Jay's book teaches you both the psychological facts about the real effects of bad breathing and simple exercises that will retrain how you breathe so that in every second you are fueling and literally healing every cell in your body. His book is backed by research gathered from more than 40 different medical studies and textbooks, and the information contained in this short book has proven to drastically improve your quality of life. I do have a direct link to Jay's book, which is available at Amazon.com, in the show page description, so there's a link there. And you can also find out more about Jay by visiting his website, which is jaymaxjuster, that's jaymaxjuster.com. And again, I have a direct link to his website also in the show page description. And you can also join him on Facebook and LinkedIn. So with that, I'd like to welcome Jay to the show. Good day, Jay.
Hey, Robert. Thanks so much for having me.
It is my pleasure, and I'm sitting here breathing properly. So I'm looking forward.
That's great.
I'm really looking forward to you sharing the information that you gathered with the listeners, because, as I mentioned to you just before we came on the show, your book and I've read many books on breathing, you know, and the importance of breathing properly, but your book is the first that I've read in more than the 5 years I've been doing the show that lists the scientific and medical reasons behind certain breathing practices. And to me, that was the most enlightening part, you know, and I thought, okay, now I understand a little bit about it. So, you know, kudos to you for putting together such a unique important view of breathing.
Yeah, thank you very much for saying that.
It's my pleasure. So, you know, I'd like to first start, if you wouldn't mind, sharing with the listeners your personal story and why and how is it that you got interested in just, you know, looking into the importance of the air that we take in.
Absolutely. For me, I grew up with asthma. I grew up with allergies. I was a pretty sick kid. I went to the same school for 12 years of my life, and a lot of the friends that had been there for 12 years as well were jokingly saying that I didn't deserve to be in the 12-year club because of how many days of school I missed. And I went to University of Southern California, majoring in psychology and minoring in critical approaches to leadership. And what both of those different disciplines had in common was a scientific, empirical view of the different subjects that were taught in an interdisciplinary fashion. So I entered college actually as a philosophy major, which asked these same questions as psychology. Who am I? What does it mean to be human? How can we be happy? What can we do to really love each other and to do things that are good for the world? And psychology approaches it from this perspective of, let's run some experiments to figure that out. Let's do some research and see whether we can arrive at some facts and some conclusions, rather than philosophy, which says, let me sit in front of a fireplace or talk about it with some friends and see if we can come up with some ideas that sound good, that feel good, and that when you say them, people think that you're a genius. And that shift was the same shift that gotten me from having the same experience as you did, where I'm reading a lot of these books, self-help books that range from how to have a better mentality to these books about better breathing, and feeling like, wow, these sound really good, but they don't seem to have a lot of substance. I wonder why that is. And I wonder if doctors are talking about breathing. I wonder if spiritual leaders are talking about breathing and having a dialogue that's potentially being missed by the general pop psychology, pop culture, new age authorship, trying to say really powerful ideas with some really interesting language and not a lot of scientific backing. So what actually got me, the turning point for me in this study, was when I learned that Otto Warburg won the Nobel Prize in 1931 for discovering that cancer cannot survive where there's oxygen. And that blew my mind, right? The Nobel Prize, I mean, this is the most sophisticated, the most peer-reviewed, the most scrutinized award that you can win. And here he's saying that cancer, which is one of the most deadly, one of the most catastrophic things that we experience in our time, and it's so pervasive in our culture. I mean, everybody knows somebody who's had or had to deal with cancer. And yet, somehow oxygen, which is something that everybody is supposed to have all throughout their bodies all the time, is its kryptonite, is its arch nemesis. It just didn't make sense to me, right? And that's what started to shine the light on this fact that I simply didn't know, that somehow there is this equation that isn't adding up. Somehow there are ways that people experience areas in their body that are completely devoid of oxygen, that completely lack oxygen. And there's a totally biological, totally scientific, completely explainable process for how that occurs. And that's what got me to start writing the book, to do the research, and to lay out what I did in Breathe Well and Prosper.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's, to me, it was, you know, and you talk about the pervasiveness. I mean, just in the news in this last week, you know, several very prominent musicians, you know, having
Absolutely.
Passed on with cancer in the late 60s. I mean, so it's, you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, it is in the forefront, and it, like you say, virtually everyone is affected in some way, if not themselves, then with someone that they know. So, I mean, it's truly one of those. I mean, even had Obama having the war on cancer, or, you know, doing the Joe Biden thing, because it's mm-hmm. just such a an intense, like you say, pervasive disease. So, so now you took, you know, that, and then you went in and started. Now, how did the focus on breathing, you know, is it because of the fact that that's how oxygen is entered into the system?
It was a little bit of everything. So the focus on breathing came about as a result of the research. One thing that I learned as a psychologist, learning statistics, learning how to form hypotheses and use the scientific method, is that you want to have a hypothesis going in, but you don't want to allow that hypothesis or some expectation filter your judgment of the data that you get. So when I initially found out that oxygen is somehow the arch nemesis, the kryptonite of cancer, cancer can't survive in an environment where there's oxygen. It just, in a way, it just had to be true because this guy wins the Nobel Prize, which almost would be impossible if some scientist somewhere found one possible exception to the rule. So oxygen can't be in the same place as cancer. How is it possible that people get cancer? And I did this research that really brought me down an interesting path where I had to really take these separate pieces, almost these separate pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, and put them together in a particular way where everything started to make sense. Because what the common conversation is centers around oxygen, when in reality, the central problem that people experience and the reason why people breathe incorrectly or in a way that is actually unhealthy is totally dependent on their intake and their expansion of carbon dioxide, which completely flipped the script of what every single person is talking about. Because you can read the books about the oxygen breakthrough, about how important oxygen is to your body, and that's all well and good, and it's all very true. Oxygen is extremely important, but what has been left out of the conversation and why it's taken medicine and why almost nobody is actually discussing the process underlying the effects, the consequences of unhealthy breathing, is because they haven't shifted their focus yet to carbon dioxide.
Yeah, you know, that, okay, that, when I started reading that in your book, that's kind of what started the, started me wondering. And it's like, you know, like you say, I had never thought about it. I mean, to me, it was just, you know, the byproduct of breathing and something that, mm-hmm. you know, we really don't pay attention to, you know. But one, mm-hmm. one of the things that I found interesting is that, you know, when, you know, and then I thought about, you know, the idea of taking in deeper breaths, you know, to get more oxygen in. So I would love for you to share with the listeners, you know, the, you know, the idea of shallow breathing versus deep breathing, and how that differs, how that focus differs from proper breathing.
Absolutely. So the common thing that almost every person suffers from, and what I refer to when I talk about unhealthy breathing, is put simply shallow breathing. And that's when you're using the top part of your lungs and disregarding the bottom 10% of your lungs or more. And why that's important is because the bottom 10% of your lungs are 5 to 6 times more effective at transporting oxygen into your bloodstream than the top 10%. And the reason for that is, number one, your bottom 10% of your lungs are that much closer to your heart and the major arteries and veins that are right next to your heart as well. The second reason is that oxygen gets transported into your bloodstream at the bottom of your lungs through gravity. So gravity is pushing the oxygen down into the bloodstream rather than oxygen having to travel horizontally through the sides of your lungs. And the third reason is that 70% of your alveoli, which are the only locations that blood oxygen transport can occur, are in the bottom third of your lungs. So if you're not utilizing the bottom 10% of your lungs, then you're taking out a pretty big portion of all of the available alveoli. And as a result, you have to breathe in 5 to 6 times more oxygen. It's usually around 3 times more oxygen, a higher volume of oxygen, in order to get the same amount of oxygen to your bloodstream if you're using that bottom 10% of your lungs. And to take that a step further of why that's important, if you're able to expand your lungs, then not only do you have much more effective and efficient oxygen blood transport, but you're also activating your diaphragm. And that's important because there's a lesser known system inside of your body than the respiratory system. Everybody knows, yeah, I breathe in oxygen, I breathe out carbon dioxide, great. What they don't know about is the lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system is interesting because, number one, even though it has twice as much fluid, lymphatic fluid, as you have blood inside of your body, it doesn't have a central pump like the heart, which pushes and pulls the blood throughout your body. The lymphatic system, twice as much fluid, but there's no central pump. And the way that the fluid will move through a person's body is, number one, through moving, so being active, which is why having a sedentary lifestyle can be so damaging for a lot of people. Number two, through breathing, so that you're in the same way that you would be moving your muscles and your skeleton through actual movement, breathing can create that same effect. And number three is through gravity. So it will actually push the lymph fluid down. And your lymphatic system, in the simplest terms, serves two important functions. The first one is that of a garbage man. So you have all these lymphocytes throughout your body, and you have twice as much fluid, so it's twice as important in some respects as your blood. and it goes into every single tissue, organ, and cell that you have to take out the toxins. And what the lymphocyte will do is bring it into a dumping site, which are called the lymph nodes. So essentially you have the garbage man, which is the lymphocyte, and that's its truck, is the cell, the lymphocyte as well. And it'll bring it to the central dumping station, which is the lymph node. And you have different clusters of these nodes throughout your body. What's really important to know about that is that 60% of your lymph nodes exist right below your diaphragm. So if you're not activating your diaphragm by breathing in deeply, then you're going to not activate those 60% of your lymph nodes because, again, there's no way for those nodes to self-activate unless you're moving around or unless you're breathing in deeply. So if you don't breathe in deeply, you're not getting 60% of your garbage man workforce. The second job that the lymphocytes have is that of a doctor. So your lymph system is what creates your white blood cells. Your lymph system is what will create. Your lymphocytes also have the function to fight off any viruses or toxins that they find, because not only are they going to your cells in order to take away the toxins, to dump them off and to throw out the garbage somewhere else at the lymph node, they're also there to say, hey, there's an attack, there's a virus here, and to destroy it as preventative medicine or even as a responsive type of medicine. So when you're not breathing in deeply, you're taking away 60% of your garbage man and your doctor workforce inside of your body. Which, if you think about not having 60% of your garbage men and your doctors right. in the real world, that's a pretty significant statistic to think about.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions about what I said so far?
Well, there's an extra step.
No.
Yeah, great. I was going to say no questions so far, but yeah, when you think about, you know, the fact that, you know, there is this, you know, huge, I mean, this is where kind of it goes beyond breathing when it starts to interact with another system within your body. And so it shows that it's just not as simple as, you know, taking in oxygen and, you know, that it basically it's, the basis and its effect of many other systems within the body. So, but yes, taking away
Absolutely.
That 60%, you know, would be a pretty stinky environment to be in.
Absolutely. And you're exactly right. So the next part of this conversation, after we talk about the biology, is there's also the psychological and the spiritual component of breathing and how shallow breathing has those effects as well. But to return to the conversation at hand, so you're breathing in shallowly, you're not activating the bottom 10% of your lungs, so you need to breathe in typically 3 times a higher volume of air in order to get the same amount of oxygen to your bloodstream. And since you're breathing in shallowly, you're not activating your diaphragm, which means you're not getting that 60% of your doctor and garbage man workforce, since you're not activating the 60% of lymph nodes that exist right beneath the diaphragm. And the second part of this conversation that is really not talked about, but is the reason why you have all of this evidence out there that is pointing to it, but people are either on the medical clinical side and being able to point to, hey, people are breathing in this way and they're having these chronic illnesses and these effects. And you have these other people who are saying oxygen is so important, and when we can have high quality oxygen, we have really amazing lives and we can be happier and more vital. But there's not the connection, the bridge, which is the missing link, which is really the power behind what I found in this book, is when you're breathing in 3 times as much air, logically, you also have to breathe out 3 times as much carbon dioxide. And the reason why that is the problem and the reason why it creates that connection is because carbon dioxide has the function in your body of a vasodilator. And what that means in layman's term is that when you have more carbon dioxide in your body, all of the tubes that your blood travels through will expand. So your veins, your capillaries, your arteries will all expand, which would be the same thing as saying, have your highways in the city, and with having extra carbon dioxide, a 2-lane highway turns into a 4 or a 5-lane highway going each way. So what would have been a massive traffic jam in the 2-lane highway all of a sudden becomes easy driving because you're on a 5-lane superhighway going each way. And that's the exact analogy of what goes on in your body. So when you're breathing out 3 times as much carbon dioxide and robbing your body of that vasodilator, all of the tubes that your blood travels through constrict and they shrink. So what used to be 5-lane superhighways turn into 2-lane regular highways, and all of your blood cells are stuck in stop-and-go traffic inside of your body. And that's a problem because your blood cells are like these gigantic U-Haul trucks carrying rich, nutritious oxygen to every single cell, tissue, and organ in your body. But because they're stuck in the stop-and-go traffic, they can't get the oxygen to the places where it needs to go fast enough. And as a result, there are areas, there are pockets in your body where oxygen simply did not arrive. And that is the fundamental precondition necessary for cancer to exist.
Mm-hmm.
That's the equation.
Yeah. Now, question here. Now, you know, I understand by, you know, breathing and taking in more air, you have to obviously, you know, exhale as much. How is it always proportional? In other words, is there a way where you, in breathing, that you, you know, take in, you know, let's say an appropriate, you know, you've taken a certain amount of oxygen, and when you exhale, the amount of carbon dioxide that's exhaled isn't, you know, excessive. Does that make any sense?
So the interesting thing about this equation is that the amount of oxygen that's in the air that you breathe in and the amount of carbon dioxide that's in the air that you breathe out remains the same proportion. So it's not like when you become a better breather, all of a sudden you're breathing in the same volume of air. So, but the proportions have shifted. And by that, what I mean by that is when you are properly breathing, you're breathing in a third of the volume of air as these shallow breathers are, which if you look at the medical studies, people with chronic diseases, people who are about to die, people with cancer, have that same high volume of air that they're breathing. So when people are breathing in this higher volume of air, they're mimicking the breathing patterns of a sick, diseased, and dying person. Because what's happening inside of their body is the same process that would be the decaying, toxifying process that would eventually cause a person to be dead, that it would eventually weed them out from the gene pool because it's considered weak. And to answer your question more directly, and hopefully in a way that could make more sense, is that it's not about being able to necessarily change your breathing style as much as it is the depth of your breath. And it's counterintuitive because people think, well, when I breathe in more deeply, I should be breathing in a higher quantity of air, a higher volume of air. And they miss that there is a reason why. There is a function behind taking oxygen from out of the environment and putting it into your body. It's because your blood cells need that oxygen to transport it to the different cells, tissues, and organs of your body. So if your blood has all the oxygen it needs and it can move through your body freely to get the oxygen where it needs to go immediately when it needs to get there, then you simply don't need as much air in order to get the amount of oxygen that you need for your body. And because of the effectiveness that the new breathing techniques that are demonstrated in my book, the new breathing exercises that allow you to retrain your body to get maximal and optimal effectiveness for every single milliliter of air, you could call it, inside of your lungs, getting the optimal amount of oxygen because you're using that bottom 10% of your lungs, you're even using the bottom third of your lungs, you're activating your diaphragm, and you're able to get the most effective oxygen transport of oxygen or air that you breathe in, that's what makes the difference. And I hope that that conversation answered the question, because it's kind of tough to discuss this in more normal or right. Normal terms that aren't as scientific.
Right. No. And see, again, I appreciate the scientific perspective of it, you know, because, again, to me, that's in what I've encountered in many books has been missing. And it, you know, for people out there who, you know, kind of want to put their finger on exactly what kind of processes, you know, bodily processes are involved, you know, in this, you know, interactive experience, then, you know, that's, you know, what they get from reading the book. And anyway, again, that's one that I liked. And, you know, to me, it just, I mean, it makes sense, you know, and then if something makes sense to me, then, you know, as I go through, you know, once I read that, and then I got to the point of doing the exercises, it was kind of like I was envisioning those processes happening. You know what I mean? So
right,
really,
yeah,
kind of, yeah.
You have this experience of your body that you might not have had before, because before it's like either really complicated biology or it's just, oh, I'm me and I'm a person. So you don't really think about yourself in terms of these different systems, like the respiratory system, the lymphatic system. You don't really think about yourself in terms of like your lungs and your heart and all this stuff. But all of that, all of these individual parts are combining to create your vitality and your energy. And breathing ends up being the engine, like the engine in your car. It ends up being the complete, it's the bridge between everything. And when we can improve the way that we breathe, we can improve the way that everything else runs inside of our body, which is our car. It's everything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I want to take just a quick break, Jay, and then I do want to invite people who are listening, if you would like to call in and ask Jay any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions that you would like for me to pose to Jay, feel free to type them in. And then, Jay, we're going to take about 90 seconds. And then when we come back, you know, I think it would be good then now to move on to, you know, we kind of alluded to next the, you know, the psychological and the spiritual aspects of the breathing, and we'll go from there, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all occasion unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, today my very special guest is Jay Juster, and we're talking about his book, Breathe Well and Prosper, Achieve Total Health, Wealth, and Well-Being in 20 Minutes. And again, his book is available at Amazon.com, and I have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. And you can also find out more about Jay by visiting his website, which is jmaxjuster.com, and there is a direct link to that as well in the show page description. And you can also join him on Facebook and LinkedIn. And with that, we're back, Jay.
Perfect. Good to be back.
Great. Great, thanks. And you know, one thing that I also I liked about your book is the references that you gave at the end. you know the references that you used for your material. You know, for me, I'm the kind of person that, you know, I love to explore further. You know, and it's such a treat to be able to have an author list their references so that I can go on, you know, go on and expand and look at it deeper. So anyway, that's another plus in your book that not many have that I also enjoy.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I definitely did that on purpose because I know what I'm saying can be controversial to some people. It might not make sense to some people. And I wanted to make sure that every step of the way I backed up what I was saying with evidence, with data, with research, so people could follow along in a way with me in my journey of discovering this really fascinating aspect of something that's really universal, something that we all have in common. And the beauty of the Breathe Well and Prosper idea is that it allows every single person to take control of their health and their well-being, and this idea of wealth and energy. So many people just talk about positive thinking and they talk about taking action and just making a decision and going for it. And the problem that a lot of people experience is not having the energy, not having the resources available. And in my opinion, being able to really utilize and leverage our breathing to get the most out of it is the first step in being able to do the same process for everything else in our life, whether that's better relationships, more money, more happiness, and everything else that makes up the good life.
I agree. I agree totally. And, you know, the one thing, you know, what is just so important as far as, you know, just having the energy to do these things. You know, I know that many people in my circle that you know, that energy drain is just predominant in their lives, and it's like I don't have the energy to do this. I'm just exhausted, you know. And you know, a lot of people are trying different, you know, ways, you know, different kind of remedies to try and, you know, boost that energy. But what I really like about your book is it's simple as the air that we breathe. You know what I mean? And how.
Right.
Know? But, you know, and that's wonderful. Now, I do want to let listeners know that shortly after we talk about the psychological and spiritual aspects, Jay's going to go ahead and share one of the seven different exercises that's in his book. And the one thing I liked about also, Jay, in your book, those different exercises is that, you know, they can really be tailored to the individual. I mean, it's not, mm-hmm. you know, out of the seven, I would say probably three of them I found it easier to do for me, you know,
sure.
I think that's what's wonderful is that you, like, there are different ways, you know, to be able to achieve the end result, but, you know, and leave it up to the individual reader to decide which works best for them.
Absolutely. That was the intention, and I'm glad that you got that message.
Great. Boy, it seems like I got all of the messages right so far. It's a sign that the author, you know, a great author who's been able to achieve their desired results. So that's good. So let's go ahead and talk about the psychology, you know, and the fact of the impact that this has on the brain and all of the related emotional and physical aspects there.
Absolutely. And I want to emphasize something before we do move on to the psychological component of it, because it's such a powerful idea that breathing could be the cure for something as profound and as pervasive as cancer. And some of what I talk about in the book is that it could potentially be the preventative cure. It's not something that you can do after the fact. Once you get cancer, you can't really breathe better and have that be the cure, at least not what doctors have shown. But being able to use it as a preventative measure can not only help you avoid cancer, but also potentially over 200 different chronic diseases like arthritis, obesity, asthma, and some other very prominent things that we're facing in our culture, which brings this idea of medicine as being saving you from the symptoms like your cough, your runny nose, your sneezing,
mm-hmm.
versus being able to cure the underlying mechanism, being able to fight off the underlying viruses and toxins. And the same thing could be said on a psychological level as it could on a physical level. And I wanted to say that because it's a useful bridge for people who aren't as familiar with the core idea behind what medicine can do, that when you have a physical illness or a physical ailment, doctors will usually give you some medicine. So you have the flu, you'll get Tamiflu or Sudafed. And in the same way, there's therapists who can start to cure some psychological ailments. So there's ADD, there's these different disorders. People can be schizophrenic, they can have panic attacks, and they can have this wide range of things that affect them on a psychological level. And the bridge concept is that when you're breathing in a high volume of air and thus breathing out a high volume of air, which creates a traffic jam inside your body, the blood and the oxygen aren't as effective at getting oxygen to your brain. That's what's so important for people to realize. Just like there could be pockets inside of your body where there's no oxygen, which is the fundamental precondition for cancer, what happens when you have this traffic jam because you're breathing out a higher quantity of air is your brain starts to get in deficit. And when our brain is in deficit, it affects us in every single way imaginable. We have higher cravings for sugary, salty foods, and we can't regulate our cravings as well. We have worse trouble sleeping. We're not able to regulate our emotions as well. And as a result, we have these wide swings. Like you were saying, people feel emotionally drained. Well, a lot of that is because they're not as capable of having their hands on the steering wheel of their car, which is their brain. So an emotion comes up, and they're traveling along a street. An emotion comes up, and it just turns the steering wheel, and now they're just driving a totally separate way. So a lot of their energy is not only being spent creating that emotion, but also responding to and trying to mitigate the effects that that emotion has on where they're trying to go and on their happiness and on their relationships. So they get angry, and instead of being able to have some space around that anger, instead of potentially not having that anger be something that takes them over immediately, they can experience some of that anger rising up in their body, just like a bubble inside of a soda can. Instead of, you know, this is actually a perfect analogy. So most people, when they're breathing poorly, their body and their brain is sort of like a soda bottle that's been shaken up. And every time something happens, it's like twisting the cap. And they just have all of these bubbles that shoot up, and they have no ability to separate them out. It's overflowing. It's a catastrophe. They're in panic, anxiety mode. Being able to control your breathing and adopt this new way of breathing in a default way allows you to experience life where you've already opened the can, and one bubble can rise up every once in a while, and it doesn't take you over. That's a pretty profound shift, and that's something I really want to sink in, because on the psychological level, when you're breathing in this new effective manner, your brain can get more oxygen, which studies have shown in Duke University and then in the University of Jonsu. What they demonstrated through fMRIs, which is a new way to scan the brain during emotional responses and during different activities to see what's going on, they found that these people, yogis is one of the main people that they studied. So they were trying to see what's the difference between these spiritual masters, these yogis who can hold their breath for hours and have unending joy and happiness, right? How can we be like them? What's their brain like? How is it different than ours? And one of the things that they found was that their brain didn't have what are called spontaneous firings of the neurons. So your brain, as an analogy, is like a 1 billion piece jigsaw puzzle, because that's the number of neurons that you have. And your brain, when it has sufficient oxygen and sufficient sugar and glucose, it has the ability to control which of those neurons fire. When it doesn't have sufficient oxygen, it loses its capacity to control which neurons fire, which allows some to fire spontaneously, which is why somebody might have the passing thought that there's a lion around the corner. And instead of being able to distinguish that as something they saw in a movie or something that they might have dreamt about last night or simply a passing weird thought, their brain will actually turn in to fight or flight mode. I'm about to die, and it will cause them to have a panic attack filled with anxiety. And on a lesser scale, it could be you send out an email and you forgot to attach the attachment, right? We've all done something like that. And instead of it being this big deal where in your brain you're imagining all these things of a person laughing at you, like, I can't believe they did that, how dumb, or you feel like you just lost all your credibility and now your business is going to crumble, when we can retrain our breathing, suddenly there's this extra space around what happened. And so even though you might have not attached the attachment, your brain no longer is so tightly wound up and it's no longer such in deficit that even though bubbles will still come up and you'll still experience some emotions, it's no longer this huge volcanic event where you'll have to erupt in anger or erupt in anxiety or erupt in some other form of sadness or some emotional outburst.
Yeah, well, you know, and I've been, you know, guilty of doing that. The one thing. So it sounds like, you know, this the more controlled reactions, you know, or the less, the smaller amount of spontaneous and, you know, synchronistic firing. It seems to me that, you know, that added extra firing is what maybe is energy draining. I mean, to me, it seems like, you know, if I have all of these, you know, billions of pieces in the jigsaw puzzle and, you know, a few hundred million of them, you know, are excited, you know, and firing off, you know, all of this, I mean, my brain is going to kind of go bonkers, you know, and to me, that's going to be, if I think about it, to me, that's tiring, you know what I mean? So is that, you know, am I reading that properly?
Absolutely. And the framework I like to use for that goes along with the idea of a jigsaw puzzle, where you're working with this 1 billion piece jigsaw puzzle, and how frustrating would it be if you couldn't tell the difference between the pieces of the puzzle that belonged for that puzzle and the ones that were just thrown in there and have no use for you. And even beyond that, what if you weren't even able to distinguish what the real picture should be, so that you have all of these pieces that are just scattered and that are all put together, and you have no ability to differentiate what's useful and what's not useful, what's real and what's fantasy, what's effective and what's ineffective, which causes a fog of confusion and thus no ability to truly experience the energy and the happiness and the vitality that is so available to everyone. So the response is you don't need antidepressants. The response is you don't need to have SSRIs that are used to affect your brain's neurotransmitters. In order to affect your brain to get it back to a healthy, self-regulated state, we need to work on our breathing, which is the fundamental core cause of cancer. And so, which could also be, by comparison in that sense, I hope people can realize if they can start to shift the needle in their belief about whether breathing could really be a preventative measure against cancer and 200 different chronic diseases, then hopefully it would be much easier to make the same shift in belief that breathing could cure things like an anxiety disorder or a panic disorder, especially when what's the most common sense advice people get when they're angry? Take a deep breath. What's the most common sense advice that people get when they're getting all emotional? It's calm down, take a breath, take a moment, let's pause. So it's already a part of our collective understanding, but it hasn't really been demonstrated how far we can take this principle to apply it to these different aspects of our lives, including spiritual enhancement, spiritual practices, meditation, and enlightenment.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of where I wanted to go next. You know, it seems that, you know, when you talked about the yogis and, you know, the how they were looking at the brain activity, you know, during meditation. So is meditation, would meditation be, the effects of meditation be heightened with proper breathing? I mean, it would. Now, obviously, you know, we want to, you know, when we're in a little meditative state, doing however we do it, that it's, you know, we're always breathing. So now, you know, is it? I mean, is there a is the proper using the proper breathing techniques? Does that enhance the ability to enter a meditative state and get
Absolutely.
The benefits of that state? Okay.
Yeah, it's yes and yes. And I would put those in all caps and exclamation marks, because what a lot of people struggle with when they're meditating is this struggle of, how do I turn off my mind? There's all these thoughts,
mm-hmm.
there's all these things that I need to get done, and I'm meditating, so I'm sitting still and I'm not doing anything, and it's so frustrating. And this is the principle of having spontaneous firings of your neurons in action, because it's almost like when you sit down to meditate, that's the moment that you recognize there are all these bubbles that are attempting to take you over, and they're usually very successful. People, when they first start meditating, can't sit still for even a minute because they're like, this is a waste of time, I need to go do something, I have to get stuff done with my day. And what's so interesting is that when people get deeper into their meditative practice, they recognize that that those bubbles are taking them over, that they're not the emotion, those emotions aren't true, it's just a story that's being told. But because of either the stories that they've been telling themselves, and in this case, breathing is really what we're saying, that emotion is capable and allowed to take them over, such that there's a story in their head that if they don't get something done, it's going to ruin their lives, just like the fantasy of the lion around the corner. And they believe in it so much that they stop meditating and have to take care of that. So when you can fix your breathing, it's that same situation where instead of it being the bottle of soda that is constantly in a state of erupting, you're a bottle of soda that has bubbles that rise inside of you, like your emotions, your thoughts, but you have this expanded awareness that allows you to observe rather than having them take you over, which is a pretty profound shift for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, definitely quieting that monkey mind is a challenge for me. I mean, you know, that's one of my challenges. I constantly try to conquer. You know, it is important. Well, you know, gosh, we're down to about almost 10, 11 minutes here. So I would love, if you wouldn't mind sharing, again, you have multiple exercises in your book for
Correct.
People to do, you know, breathing exercise. But I would love for you to be able to share with our listeners just one of those so that I can get a good idea of, you know, the things that are offered in the book.
Absolutely. And I will share this one because it's a very easy one. It's more of the introductory exercise so that people can get a feel for what it's like to breathe differently over an extended period of time. But it's by no means what I would consider the most effective, so the most bang for your buck. If you put in 5 minutes doing a particular exercise that's different than this one, I think you would get more out of it. But this one allows somebody to experience the difference. So with that being said, it's called the Century Count. And what somebody would do if they wanted to perform the exercise is they would lay down flat on their back with one hand on their stomach and the other hand on their chest. Initially, just taking a few seconds to notice where their breath is going and which hand is moving without trying to change anything. This is not about being right. This is not about doing it right. This is about taking time to really check in with yourself to see whether you're experiencing some of the improper breathing patterns, so that you can recognize, based on the conversation we just had, this is leading me down not the path that I want to go to, rather than being, I have to immediately fix this. It's more like, okay, there's no judgment. This isn't wrong. This is just not the best choice. I can make a better choice. It's the same thing if you're noticing you're eating bad foods. It's not like, I'm wrong, I need to do something. It's more like, okay, I'm going to make better choices. So go through that initial check-in phase every single time. Every single time, just to check in with yourself and really get in tune with your body. That's a lot of what this is about as well. A lot of the spiritual part of this is that when you tune into your breathing and you bring your day-to-day, moment-to-moment awareness back into the present because you're always breathing, it allows you to tune back into your body. So you're laying down on your back, you're checking in with yourself, you're coming to grips with any emotions that are constantly going on in your brain, anything that's pulling you in one direction, and you're giving yourself permission to honor yourself in this moment, to do this exercise because you're worth it. And that's a very important part of this. It's not just the mechanics. It's not just the process. It's the honoring of yourself. It's the permission that you're giving yourself to spend this time to check in with yourself and to breathe intentionally in a way that you want to breathe in the future. So for the next 100 breaths, which is why it's called the century count, what you do is you intentionally breathe such that you're moving the hand that's on your navel. And you want to extend your stomach as far up as you can. And then it's not in the sense that you're forcing it or that you're trying to push it, but just when you're breathing in, just pay attention and try to really put all of the air into your stomach. And then when you're breathing out, pay attention and make sure that your hand's going down and that your hand on your chest isn't moving and the hand on your stomach is moving. That's more of the intention here. It's not, let me try and breathe in as much as I can. If I breathe in super deep now, then that extreme will balance out the previous extreme of breathing in shallowly, and then I'll end up somewhere in the middle. It doesn't work like that. If you can adopt the mindset of taking it as easy as possible, of enjoying and feeling and putting a smile on your face and being happy when you're giving yourself that permission and that opportunity to honor yourself and to give yourself that medicine, is really what you're doing, is that's really the best medicine you could ever give yourself for those 100 breaths. That's going to be what rewires your brain. That's going to be what delivers the dopamine, the serotonin, and the pleasurable chemicals that ingrain it into your brain that, oh, this is an amazing thing. It's not stressful. It's not like going to the gym to lose weight where I have to lift all these weights and do all this stuff to achieve a goal. It's almost the opposite. And that's another really amazing thing about this breathing process is when we can give ourselves the space and the time to breathe in a way that is healthier, in a way that is revitalizing, really, those 100 breaths are revitalizing. You'll stand up and you'll just feel energized. Because on the one hand, your brain wouldn't be spending all that time spinning its wheels like you're on the treadmill. What do I do now? What do I do now? And you're taking that mental break. But also, you've now just given your body a huge dose of oxygen and a huge dose of super powerful nutrients. And that's just supercharging yourself for success.
Yeah. You know, what I liked about that one in particular is that, you know, the fact that you do it for 100 breaths, it really supported making it a regular, you know, making a standard operating procedure. I mean, there's one of them, like there's one called Whispering LA, which is like a 3 to 5 minute exercise, which would be great for that, you know, real quick, you know, fix kind of thing. But with the 100 breath, yeah, with the 100 breath one, to me, it's really like the basis for establishing a new pattern, you know, and to me, that's, you know, that's valuable, you know, and it doesn't take that long, but it does have wonderful effects.
And another thing that I like about it, Robert, is that it provides you some concrete idea of how much you're committed to retraining your breathing, and not in the sense that you need to beat yourself up if you don't make it to 100, but in the sense that you get to have some perfect insight into your current operating procedures and in your current operational mode. So for a lot of people, they set a New Year's resolution and 60% of people don't make it past February or some statistic like that. And it could be similar here, where now you have a clear way to measure your current state of mind, where if you're doing this breathing exercise and you sat down with the intention to do 100 and you do 60 and then your mind takes you over and you need to go start doing dinner, and then an hour later, you're watching TV and you're like, oh, wait, I only did 60 breaths and I meant to do 100. And it kind of kicks in. That extra awareness will start to kick in. And the best part, Robert, the best transformation is when people respond to me and they say, Jay, My eyes were open. I realized that I'm breathing in every single second. And every single second of my life, I have the opportunity and I have the choice to breathe better. And that is a symbol, that is an analogy for being able to be conscious, being able to be empowered rather than depending on medicine or another person to help you. And that is a symbol for the true freedom that we all have to take control of. And I personally know no better way to help people find themselves, find their authentic calling, and being able to have confidence and take a stand in that, than allowing them to retrain how they breathe. Because then their body becomes this vibrant, vitalized machine, or this being. It is their life. What's interesting is a lot of people in the Judeo-Christian, I'm just going to say this one thing and I'll let you interrupt me, is the Judeo-Christian idea of Ruach, which is the ancient Hebrew word for the Holy Spirit. And it's also, when translated, to be breath. So we're functioning on all cylinders here. It's biological, it's psychological, it's spiritual and religious.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's the ultimate, like you say, recognition of the power that we have to really put that healer, those healing processes that are innate in our body, put them to work, you know, and to really have everything operating as it should be, you know, and to recognize that, you know, we just by simply, you know, breathing properly and getting, you know, getting our body, having our body, you know, get what it needs is such a basic thing. I mean, and we're doing it all the time, but I'm sure that most people just aren't, you know, breathing properly. But, you know, gosh, we're down to the last couple of minutes, Jay. This has really been a great show. I really want to thank you very much for your time and your insight. And again, I really enjoyed your book. The scientific perspective as to, you know, why we would want to breathe this particular way or breathe the proper way and the impact on our various systems. And again, like I said, you know, the references that you have at the back of the book is, you know, I mean, for people who, like me, want to know more, you know, it's a great,
right.
It's a great easy tool to say, okay, this, now let me go read what Jay read. But it was a really good book.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. So I'm going to be also following you on Facebook and join you on LinkedIn as well. And do invite everybody else. Now, are you on Twitter too as well or no?
I am on Twitter. It's at @J_Mac_Justra, I believe.
Okay, great. Okay, I'll be sure to follow you there so I can get all of my J-fix.
great.
Next. Okay, all right. Well, thank you, Jay, again for your time, and I really appreciate it, and I'll be sure to recommend your book to people that I know because, again, it's one that I enjoy, and I know it would be very helpful for people.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Robert.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Jay Juster, and we've been talking about his book, Breathe Well and Prosper, Achieve Total Health, Wealth, and Well-Being in 20 Minutes. And again, you can join Jay on the social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and you can purchase his book from Amazon.com. There is a direct link to his book there in the show page description. And you can also find out more by visiting his website, which is jmaxjuster.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website as well in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light
by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.